have 60 seconds to comply.
I think you'd better do what he says, Mr. Kenny.
You have 60 seconds to comply. This is minute 75.
Part man.
Part machine. All pod. This minute begins with Boddicker sticking his gum to Barbara's nameplate and ends with him smoking a cigarette. And Clarence is just so fucking cool for a man named Clarence.
I'll be honest, I don't really have much to say. I think one of my only notes came up last minute. Is like, I really like that suit. I don't know why.
Yes.
It's an interesting visual language where you got this kind of, we know this guy's a piece of shit scumbag.
Mm.
And then he just waltzes into this office. We've already kind of established that these guys know each other, but this is the first moment where we get to see these two people fully interact, and it's glorious.
Yeah. And I think it shows just how much costume or clothing in real life affects how we see a person. And yeah, I think Kurtzwood he just looks like your dad. He doesn't have a very distinct look on his own, but if you style him in a certain way, you're really conveying all these ideas about him that you might not have otherwise.
And I like that we've got this like scar makeup on his face as well, which really
he looks so badass.
Yeah, no, it is visually interesting, because if this was just Clarence Boddicker in the sharp suit rocking up, I don't think it would have the impact, especially when you do get that contrast. Bit of dialogue. Yeah.
Hey, he's got the receding hairline, he's got the glasses, and so that's telling us one thing, and then you got this really slick suit, and you got the scars, and he's smoking, it's just like, damn, you're fucking badass.
Given the last moment we see him, he's kind of like cowering under Robocop, admittedly for a very good reason.
Yep.
And now he's coming in with all the dick swagger you could possibly imagine from this character, and he does not seem to give a fuck.
Yeah, he is just so confident here. And in this interaction with Barbara, the secretary, he does not blink once. He is just absolutely in his element. He's calm.
Yeah.
If you're not aware, in terms of body language analysis, they say the more you blink, the more anxious you are. And no, he's just a cool customer. And I mean, Barbara,
I'm surprised my eyes aren't going like 120 frames per second.
But yeah, Barbara, to her credit, she doesn't back down. She's taking no shit. She doesn't really blink either.
I love how she's just like, it's almost like she's had to deal with this asshole so many times.
Yeah, all men like him. And we really don't get much insight into female characters in this movie, really. There are some great women in here, but we don't have an idea of, well, are all of them having to be really tough and defensive? You know, have they in this cyberpunk future, are they all hardened as well? But this brings us to a conversation we're having on Messenger
about
how, you know, in the cyberpunk future, usually women all look like Cupid dolls and they've got all these body modifications to make them look sexier. It's like, nah, fuck that. I want Doc Ock tentacles and I want to be as powerful as a tank. And yeah,
there's a fun meme that went around and I had to share it because it's funny how, especially in sci-fi and cyberpunk, it's always the I can't remember if we brought up the male gaze before, and I think this might be a good time to bring it up because it's a really crucial part of critical film theory. And I think that's really interesting you bring it up, is because I think the only time we ever get objectification of women in this movie is the I'd buy that for a dollar scenes. And that is almost entirely deliberately satirical as we see it. Like, it's always about some dumbass guy watching the TV laughing at this dumbass thing.
Yeah, the women that we see within the world of RoboCop are not like the ones in
The show.
Oh god, what's it called? Yeah,
the Bixby Snyder show, but I can't remember what the god, it's in my notes somewhere.
Not my problem.
Yeah, everyone knows it as the I'll buy that for a dollar, but yeah, it's not my problem is the name of the show.
I think, well, Lewis is exceptional because, you know, she's Lewis and she's wonderful and all that, but I think most women that we've seen in this movie are pretty hard, and they aren't these Cupid dolls.
No.
But yeah, as we were saying off air, just that this you probably in a cyberpunk reality, you're probably going to go from one extreme to the other. As a woman, you are either going to be defensive and become a tank person, like RoboCop, or you would subject yourself to the male gaze. You would make yourself more appealing because it's a way of survival. Hmm. And what we see in RoboCop is pretty much in the middle. I mean, there's change rooms that are gender neutral, unisex. We see women in fairly powerful roles. Even this secretary here, she is pretty strong. You know, she doesn't get much to do, but she's definitely no shrinking violet.
No, she's technically the gatekeeper to Dick Jones. Well, no, as in, like, she's keeping the gate.
I'm sorry, you say gatekeeper, I'm gonna say keymaster, right?
Well, yeah, I know there's the phallic imagery and all that as well, but I'm talking about literally she's the... My brain just went to Chorus Boddicker as the keymaster. And there's a note for that which makes it even funnier. Fuck it, I'll get to it now. So it's revealed in the commentary that this actress, who goes was Joan Purkle. She's only done a bunch of stuff. Her last role was in the new Robo documentary. She's actually married to Kurtwood Smith. They married the year after this movie. So, yeah.
Oh, well, it was working, I guess.
I'm not, I don't know if they were in a relationship before this movie or not, but, both two are married. So, yeah, that... It's all connected. Well,
I think you can tell that they are very comfortable to the point that I you know, the whole eye contact thing.
Yeah.
I don't know how much they would have been consciously thinking about that, but you can tell these are two people who are very comfortable with each other.
Yeah, but it is good that she's like, you know, as much as I want to turn away this dipshit, you know, he is expecting him.
Yeah.
She doesn't have much. She doesn't say much, but it's all that. I love Barbara for it.
The color purple. I have this fascination with the color purple in movies because it is almost never used. And yet, in these... Yeah, and yet, in these minutes of RoboCop and even in the remake, which we will see soon, purple everywhere. I don't know. What the hell's going on?
Yeah, because there's purple paint highlights on RoboCop himself.
Mm-hmm.
Spectral highlights, I should say.
Yeah, and it's so rarely used in film... Usually because it's incredibly difficult color to get right, it's not quite red, it's not quite blue.
Yeah.
But it is just such a vibrant and unique and unnatural color, and so when it is used, it tends to be for special occasions. I guess it's a sometimes color.
Well, I just remember because it's normally associated with the color of royalty because it was back in the day such a rare and expensive dye that only rich people could afford it, and yeah, it's hard to get light.
And ironically, black used to be a color of wealth as well, because just to keep anything that dark, there's nothing you can really dye it with, and so you'd have to have it constantly re-dyed to get it to look even somewhat black. Don't get me started on how Maleficent's costumes in the live-action movie are too black. But anyway.
And then you have to stop me getting started on how black plays with light. And so you have this chromatic weirdness where in certain things, lights, it looks completely all black and the same. And then as soon as you go into daylight, you can see the different shades of black.
Yep. And so I guess technology in that respect made black into, it went from a color reserved for royalty to every worker at Kmart is wearing black pants and it's considered the most generic thing in the world.
Well, let's also face it, in textile industry, if you fuck up a dye job on a piece of clothing, you just dunk that thing in black and it'll be fine.
Done. Sorted, yeah. Man, I've only had one dye disaster. It was a thing for a friend of mine. So, you know, they're understanding. Worst nightmare.
Terrible at dyeing.
It's hard. But yeah, Purple
Would you
has...
say it's a Die Hard?
Yeah. And yet Purple never really lost its specialness. And you often see old ladies who are obsessed with purple. You know, if there's one color, they're always decked in head to toe. It's purple, and I don't know why.
No idea.
You'll start noticing them around now.
Yeah, probably will. I don't think I own anything purple except the helmet I just painted.
I am currently looking at a 1980s suit, big shouldered suit jacket that my grandmother gave me. I can't wait to alter that. But yeah.
Well, actually, you know, a purple zoot suit might look really spiffy.
Hell yeah. Oh, going back to... I was going to say Curse with... well, I guess it's not incorrect, but Boddicker's...
Yeah, Clarence Boddicker.
...suit. So that cut is so 40s or 50s. Okay. And we don't get that wider cut on men's suits anymore. And I actually think that's a real shame. Yes, I think the fitted skinny suits look great on certain body types, but they don't look good on everyone.
I probably would not be able to pull that look off.
Yeah, especially on bigger guys, I think if you've got the pleated pants, you've got the double-breasted jacket, those are really going to help to work with your body. And yeah, we talk a lot about how women's fashion has all sorts of issues and all that, but honestly, I think men's clothing is less accommodating to different body types.
It also tends to be a bit more generic, the idea of like, no one styles for men necessarily in fashion. Mm-hmm. It's always, oh yeah, t-shirt, jeans, suits, yeah. That's
yeah, unless you want to go real high-end. If you're just shopping in Target and Kmart and all that, the men's stuff is not adventurous.
No.
And, you know, and then I don't envy men, because you go to the op shops, there's nothing for men. This is just...
I mean, I'm not an adventurous dresser myself, and I don't particularly... Like, I barely wear a suit to any... I don't like collars. I just don't like things tied around my neck, and which is weird, because sometimes I like wearing a tie, but don't particularly like a suit. But, yeah, whenever I've gone to a clothing store, it's always a bit... Yeah, it just feels a bit too samey. There's no... I guess I get to express myself through cosplay, but at the end of the day, I'd rather still wear a pair of, like, you know, loose tracky dacks and a t-shirt while I'm lounging around, and I'm trying to do better going out, but yeah, there's nothing there.
I mean, to work, I was wearing these knee-length vest dress things. Like, it's weird futuristic military stuff. I don't even know how to describe... I don't know how to describe a lot of the clothes I wear.
I'll be honest, part of me is always goes, shall I grab my Star Trek jacket and just wear that out as a fashion
Life
statement?
Is too short. I just wear whatever the hell I want, and I don't care if I look weird.
Well, the funny thing is, one of my casual common jackets to wear is my modified Ghostbusters flight suit jacket.
Yeah, that's cool.
So it's just a thing where, you know, it's got the patches and that. It's loose, it's big, you know, it's the zippers bust. I don't ever tend to close my zippers anyway. And it's a comfy jacket that I can wear when it's slightly cold. So it's like, that's my peak fashion, is just a modified costume.
It's not bad. But yeah, I think there's a real shift towards androgynous clothing for men. It's more... tight-fitting and narrow, whereas in the 40s and then again in the 80s, you had bigger suits like this, the broad shoulders, no, not quite a zoot suit, but yeah, double-breasted, pleated pants, all of that.
Oh, yeah, the shoulder pads were a thing up until, like, the early 90s.
And I love an Eisenhower jacket, and if you don't know what that is, I mean, you like Air Force, World War II Air Force, those jackets.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
Or Star Trek The Next Generation, the later seasons, the upper part of the jumpsuit, that is based on an Eisenhower.
Okay.
And, so it's kind of pleated at the waist, it's shorter, it sits up a little higher, and that is just so classically masculine, it is a very masculine silhouette. And we just don't see a lot of that anymore. And I mean, what we're seeing now is actually more akin to what we were seeing in the 1920s. The 20s was quite a dandy period for men. 60s as well. So, yeah, it's following that. What's that? Every 40-year cycle, I guess? Yeah, 20s, yeah, 60s, yeah.
20, 30, 40-year cycle is usually somewhere around there.
Somewhere around there. Yeah, and I wonder what that says about cultural values. Because what we can see, okay, 20s, 60s, and the modern day. Well, they're all periods where we think of gender as being far more, less rigid and far more expressive and individual. Whereas I think the 80s was a hyper-masculine time. And again, the 40s and 50s as well, these are hyper-masculine, classically, you know, men are men and women are women. And it's fascinating that their fashion reflects the attitude, or maybe, I don't know, is cause and effect here? Is it the fashion emphasizing the sex differences, or is it the other way around?
I don't know enough about fashion to really do it. Now, the funny thing that's come to mind is that there's, interestingly enough, there's always going to be subversion in that fashion, be it like culturally or like high-end fashion versus regular fashion, like couture, what the fuck it's called?
Couture.
But it's funny because one thing I love, it's really interesting about the internet, is you get these subcultures where people, like say men, who want to now dress dandy, like as a the phrase that comes to mind. Like there's a culture, I'm trying to think where it is. It could be Nigeria, where the dandies on there, and they dress immaculately, and this is poverty-stricken area, and it's visually striking,
and it's wonderful that they're bringing joy to themselves and everyone around them with costume and clothing, and that, as someone who sort of works in that industry or has on and off, that is so uplifting to me.
Yeah, part of me wishes I had the balls to do that. That being said, I don't usually have the opportunity. Like,
make the opportunity. I dress funky all the time. It doesn't matter where I am.
Well, no, the funny thing is, as a photographer, there's actually a legitimate reason for this, but you want to wear all black. And that's literally because of bounce light. If you're working with lights and flashes and stuff like that, if you're wearing a bright color, say, the classic one is a bright red. And you're wondering why the whites in your shots have a particular pink tinge to them. It's bounce light off your clothes. And that's no joke. That's why a lot of photographers wear black. And I guess you can make fashion choices around that. Like,
Hey, black doesn't mean boring, but black is very fashionable. What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah. No. The funny thing is my brain immediately went to the first season of Blackadder, where he's got the massive big crotch thing coming out, the codpiece.
Oh, the codpiece, yeah.
But, like, yeah, even, like, in, say, Blackadder season 2, where he's, you know, his costume is essentially all black, and it looks really, really swish.
Looks so cool. That's the best Rowan Atkinson has ever looked, I think.
Yeah, that's probably actually true. Yeah, that's probably the best. That's probably the best Blackadder season, but my favorite is still 4th.
But yeah, anyway. I'm all about diversity of fashion, and I want people to have choice. Why do people have to dress the same way? It's so boring.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is, I've been thinking about this just recently in regards to uniforms and stuff like that. I'm not a fan of uniforms in a, like, I get it for, like, you know, say, military and stuff like that. But when it comes to, like, you know, okay, I also get the technical reason why you need it for, like, a shop or, like a camo or something. But this whole idea that you're going to an office job and you need to wear a shirt and tie.
Oh, that sort of, yeah. So a dress code rather than a uniform.
Hate dress codes.
I think I love uniforms. I think uniforms have a very important place socially, psychologically, but a dress code, that I'm less keen on.
Well, it's also because let's face it, it's about uniformity to breed uniform thinking to a certain degree.
Yeah.
And I think my whatever part of my rebellious brain still exists rallies against that.
Yeah, I think if it's not necessary in terms of being able to identify who a customer can ask for help or that sort of, or safety, practicality, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I
think it's just trying to stifle people for no real reason.
Like, you hear about game companies in, like, the 1970s and early 80s where, like, you know, they're just basically getting, like, teenagers and stuff in from universities and stuff like that, and it's, like, a re-relaxed culture, and they're just wearing whatever the fuck they want.
Yeah.
And producing really cool, interesting shit out of it. And then when it got corporatized, like, a lot of it just went to shit.
Yep. But in OCP, well, obviously all the men are wearing very subdued suits. Not, I don't even think I've even seen blue. I think everyone's wearing greys and blacks.
No, Dick Jones, I think, has worn blue.
Okay.
In the first minute, because...
Maybe.
Oh, God. In the first time I see him, I think he's wearing a dark blue. We have video evidence. Why don't we just go to that?
Yeah, while you're looking that up. Yeah, the women, however, dress quite elaborately, but it is to a certain standard. They have their hair up, they have makeup, they have the nails and everything done, and I'm sure that's all in the dress code. They're all required to meet these standards. They're all wearing heels. You don't see any women wearing, you know, suits with pants. There's no androgyny. It is just that very distinct gender dichotomy. You're either a manly man or a feminine woman.
So I'm just quickly... sorry, it wasn't Dick who's wearing a blue suit. It is the old man who's wearing like a really subdued blue suit, but I'm fairly certain Dick wears blue at some point.
Hmm.
I could be mistaken.
And if it's only the old man who wears the blue, that's quite a good choice, because that makes him stand apart from everyone else.
Oh, yeah. In the bathroom, it's a very bluish suit. That's it.
Hmm.
Subdued, but it's still blue. Because, yeah, Morton's starting to reflect his dress style as well in that scene. That's where I'm thinking of.
It took us half an hour to get to the other half of the minute. Is Boddicker talking to Dick Jones, and Dick is really anxious about, well, you know, you've basically confessed to RoboCop. His memories are admissible as evidence. And
yes!
I was just thinking, are they, though? Because that's quite a novel aspect of the law. You know, would courts know to search through RoboCop's mind?
Yeah, no, it's it is technically video recording. It can be submitted as evidence. Like, technically, it's more reliable than, you know, actual witnesses to a certain degree. Would this technically be admissible in court? He did kind of rough him up. So,
yeah.
A good lawyer could probably get him out of this. Well, an OCP lawyer probably could get him out of this.
Yeah.
But that wouldn't be dramatically interesting for a movie like this.
So in a trial, the court would have access to OCP records and property to seize as evidence, but...
Mm.
Okay, so is RoboCop... is he property or is he an employee? What does he count as?
I do think he's technically property, given the language in this movie. Or is OCP considers him property?
Yeah, I wonder if in the eyes of the law, you know, how would they deal with RoboCop? And say he is property and they seize him. Do they even know to go through his memory? Do they know how to? Do they even have the actual proper USB cables, the right head to go into RoboCop? And I don't know.
I'm just imagining the OCP technician having to foot the cable 3 times to get it in right.
Yep. And, I would love to know. I mean, obviously, there's no bearing in reality. There's nothing we can reference.
Well, there's comparison. One thing we can reference, and I will get to that in a tick, but,
So if it is, what do you call it? A spoken confession or testimony, if they just talk to RoboCop and ask him, well, who do you work for, can he actually say Dick? Because that would create a conundrum. He has to uphold the law, but he can't turn on Dick Jones.
Well, here's the thing. I just, as you were saying that, I just realized he's called RoboCop. We associate him with police work. Is he actually part of the police force, and does he come under the special protections that police officers come under? He's always been more framed as, okay, I guess because OCP owns the cops. Yeah, okay, it works, but is he actually a police officer in a formal thing?
Yeah, because the division between what should be a government institution and a corporation, there's no line there. So
no,
these are the police, but they belong to OCP. It's like a sports team being funded by a corporation. It's really bizarre.
Well, if we're in the theoretical case of the people versus RoboCop, if they deem that he's not a police officer and all his arrests are deemed illegal, does every criminal he's ever arrested get let off?
Yeah. Also, is RoboCop eligible for his own legal representation, or is he property? He doesn't have any rights. He can't defend himself.
He's technically not a person. The person who he is legally dead. Again, coming back to this whole idea, is he by legal definition a person or not?
In reality, I'm pretty sure they couldn't make that argument. It would still be, no, that's a human body in there. There's still bits and pieces of a human being. Well, so, but at what line do you draw? You know,
Theseus logic. Yeah.
Oh, I would. You know what? Actually, Dick Jones has nothing to worry about, because if this goes to court, this is going to last forever. They're not even going to care about Dick Jones. They're just going to be stuck on the legalities of RoboCop as a witness.
Yes. This could have been the argument in RoboFlag. Because the whole inciting incident is what is robot and do we like it? No.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. So we have the documentary style. Okay. We got the documentary style going on, and it's initially just, you know, they're doing this OCP promotion, but the documentarian continues to interact with RoboCop, and then OCP doesn't really care, because it's like, okay, if this goes to trial, if you try to stop us, how long do you think that's going to go? It's going to go on forever, because they won't even know how to settle RoboCop as a person or not.
They will just bury it under years of litigation and delays and all the other bullshit that corporate lawyers do to make...
Well, they just settle things out of court. Oh, we'll just pay the family however many millions. We don't give a shit.
No, that's the sad thing, because all those big... a lot of those big, like, court cases where, you know, the victim's been ordered, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in punitive damages and stuff like that, they often never see a fucking cent of that. They just... The lawyers will just grind the court down with appeals until literally everyone's dead. And that happens so much. No, the funny thing I was going to bring up is... Funny thing, he predates it. Is RoboCop's footage the equivalent of body cam?
Yeah.
I'd say yes. So, in many ways, if body cam is admissible in court, then hell yeah, RoboCop's observation should be. But I think it should be, you know, pretty much all of it. Like, it can't just be the selected editor of Clarence going, you know, I work for Dick Jones. You know, it should be him going in and murderifying all the people in it.
Yes.
And again, a good lawyer will probably go, yeah, he was under coercion.
Yeah. Yeah, oh man. So that's what I want. I want this documentary style legal drama. That's hell yeah. I want that.
Before we start going too much into RoboFlag, I do have two quick notes. So I don't know what that device that Clarence sticks up his nose, but
I'm assuming it's Coke. It's some way of delivering Coke.
Well, that's the funny thing, because I went and tried to find out more information about it, and I couldn't. But I had a look in the book, and I've got this little bit of nugget here. So he comes into the room. So Clarence Boddicker, wearing shades and a festive Hawaiian shirt, sauntered into the office. He glanced at the ruptured room around him, been doing some redecorating. Clarence tossed a vial of Coke on Jones' desk. Want a toot? it's a little early, isn't it, Boddicker? Clarence smiled, sticking a small shovel full of cocaine up his nose. It's never too early to feel good. Jones frowned. Clarence, you're a fuck up. Yeah, so it's definitely cocaine. And to be perfectly honest, the dude's gone through some fucking trauma. He's probably legitimately needing that for pain management.
Yeah, right, actually, now. Yeah.
The only other thing I have is in the commentary notes, John, the producer, points out that it was Francis Dole of Orion that actually convinced them, well, actually gave them the idea that we need to have a conversation between these two villains. Like, they need to be together in the same room. And that is one of those duh moments.
Yeah. Why didn't I think of that? Yeah.
So, yeah, that's actually really cool. I don't think there's any much difference in the script. It's mostly the same. There's just some slightly different dialogue.
Except they make out at the end in the script. It's really weird. I didn't think that was...
I didn't want to bring that up.
It's not really appropriate, I don't think. Just tonally, I felt like it was, yeah.
But it's really funny that a lot of the... like, Clarence is almost played as, like, a Joker. Not a Joker as in Batman's Joker, but, like, a prankster. Like, hey, yeah, whatever, I'm fucking...
The trickster, too cool for school
kind of shit. Yeah, but, like, I love their interactions in this particular scene where it's...
Yeah.
Like, these are two people who know who each other are, and they're almost trying to one-up each other, but at the same time, they both know they need each other. Mm.
I wonder how they met.
Yeah. Well, it's more overt in the book that Dick has hired Clarence to ramp up the crime in Old Detroit purely to get Ed 209 done and through. So that's something that's not quite as dealt with in the movie, but it's good to see that that's pointed out at least.
Mm.
And that's all my notes.
Shall we get into gaslighting RoboCop?
Alex, how do you feel?
I feel fine, Dr. Norton.
Not really, but we have to.
We're contractually obligated.
We're contractually obligated.
And minute 84 begins with RoboCop picking up the gun for fingerprints.
Oh,
fingerprints.
Fuck.
Gross. And yes! Ends with Rule 63 Lewis in a neat purple sweater. And as I've said, purple, very on trend in these minutes. No idea why. Biggest thing I want to talk about is bad cop, RoboCop. Just so cringe. Kill me, eh? I don't know.
Oh, I fucking hate this minute.
Good cop, bad cop. No, it's bad cop, RoboCop. Fuck off.
Okay, RoboCop. Oh, fuck. Okay. I've always been an anti-flesh hand RoboCop guy. Mm. And I'm sick to death of people going, oh no, it's very interesting and it's subversive and all the defense against it. This is the reason why it's terrible. He's got fleshy hands with fingerprints and fingerprint oils, assumedly. Mm. And he picks up a weapon to scan it. Where do you think most of the prints are going to be? Exactly on the parts he fucking touched.
Don't use that
hand. Wow, it looks like Alex Murphy killed a lot of people with this gun.
Fucking use the other hand, you stupid bitch.
Dumbass.
Fucking hell.
Dumb fucking ass.
Oh my god.
Fuck. He couldn't even... He didn't need to pick it up. He could just scan it on the damn floor.
That's another aspect where you're only serving to remind me that this is just a man in a costume. I don't for a second,
yes.
You know, in terms of, oh, maybe the wrist is too skinny or, you know, there's nothing that defies human anatomy because it is literally a human being in a costume.
A costume. Yeah. Even the first one, you know, it's a dude in a suit, but it sells very well because it's just like the face. So it's utterly dehumanized. But how the hand is such a dumb decision. It's so bad.
Yep.
Here's the thing. He's wearing armor plated. He's in a gun shootout. Why is no one shooting the fleshy fucking part?
Shoot his face. God. Shoot his hand.
Yeah. Oh, I got so angry. And yeah, all it is to serve is to go, hey, remember those two douchebag cops at Les Count an hour or so ago that you didn't particularly give a fuck about? By the way, they're bad cops. Mm-hmm. Ooh. Fuck this movie. Fuck it. This is so shit. Yeah, I don't think there's much to say because it's such a fucking dumb moment.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, just... Yeah, I'm struggling to really articulate. It's just... It's silly. It's just tonally, it's taking itself so seriously. And...
Like, literally, like, 5 minutes ago, when Lewis last met Robocop, he's all like, I am not saying anything. I am the emotionless man. And then he comes back into the OCP... fuck it. He comes back into the cop office, and he's acting exactly the same, and then he starts being snarky. And it's like... Pick a fucking...
Yeah, actually, in this minute alone, he's sort of walking into the cop shop in this robotic way, and then he gets all snarky and shit. And I'm like, oh, what character are you playing? Who are you? I don't have a sense of who you are or what you're capable of right now.
Exactly. I was like, why are you doing this? Like... That's the other problem, I think we've talked about it before, is that there's nothing to differentiate between emotional Alex Murphy RoboCop and non-emotional Alex Murphy RoboCop. It's just, there's nothing there. Like, he's playing one character throughout this entire film, and the emotional range does not change beyond occasionally having a bit of a cry. Mm. He doesn't have a personality. God damn it.
I
didn't think I was going to talk this much about this damn minute.
But yeah.
God, it really rolled me up rewatching this fucking minute.
But I like seeing Lewis and RoboCop teamed up. I get a sense of the potential there, and I think those actors play off each other well. They just don't get to do anything.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's it. It's almost that thing where we're finally seeing a movie where that could have been. We've said this a lot. The movie that could have been, and it's almost like, oh, you must... No, it's gone away.
Mm.
No.
Oh, maybe...
No. Like, you flew too close to the sun.
Yes.
No, it's... yeah. If it wasn't for the fact that I brought up this damn movie and I made us sit through most of this damn movie. It's interesting analysis, but at the same time, Jesus fucking Christ.
It's the fault is mine. I have been the one who was like, hey, let's do the RoboCop remake.
No, it wasn't. I started it, but it was originally like a joke. Yeah. That was going to be, like, played off.
Oh, right. I felt like I was a
proper serious analysis.
I mean, look,
No, if we go back, it was me.
I still really like that one scene where he sees what's left of his body. That's still good. There's nothing else good in this, but that's just that one scene.
Yeah, the Cronenberg body horror aspect.
Oh, could you imagine this directed by David Cronenberg? Holy shit.
Oh, God, yeah, like a... No, the funny thing is, I was going to bring this up earlier on when we were talking about Perfect Robots and Ultron. This is something we're definitely going to be getting into next. Very well, not necessarily very sexy robot, but
I'm saying Ultron is
incredibly well. Oh no, I know you. But Adam Savage has been doing a bunch of videos on. He's got a RoboCop 2 Kmart kit that he got from I think it was Phil Tippett, and he's been replacing some of the resin parts with metal because, like, he wants to be able to give it some structure and stuff like that. And he constantly goes on about he thinks this is the most perfectly designed robot in all of science fiction.
Really?
Yeah, and I kind of agree with him from as an idea of a robot designed for the functions like he's doing, and like how it's interesting, like how he's got all that stuff built into him, and he's got a really interesting design. physically stupid design from the sense of, like, you know, he's basically a top heavy.
Yeah, thing. I was going to say, this is kind of a funny, chunky looking creature. What are you talking about, Adam?
But, like, in regards to, like, how he's got all, like, you know, welding things and pincers and stuff like that, and it's all built into him and it comes out in really weird and interesting ways. It's a phenomenally well-designed robot, especially from a visual point. And we'll be deep diving into Kane at some point.
Can't wait.
But it is interesting, like, oh, yeah, that's probably one of the things I'm more looking forward to in RoboCop 2 than anything else. Is talking.
I can't believe it's not too far away. We're almost there, guys.
I know. And, well, it's probably going to be almost this time next movie when we're starting to really deep dive into that as well. Which is weird enough because it does really turn up in the third act.
Yeah. As all good movie monsters do.
Exactly. And so it is interesting that from a design aesthetic, like, we have these Monday versions and they're very, again, the problem is they're all very same-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Ultron being the sexy exception. I'm still not a huge fan of the mouth, but I don't know. I've never been particularly keen on robotic mouths.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Transformers. Yeah, no. Optimus Prime should just keep that face.
Yes, off all the time. Definitely.
Just have a moving jaw. it just looks a little bit too... my suspension of disbelief does not work.
Yeah, this is not a creature that needs to use all the fleshy, lips. Flappy bits to make sound. They can just open their mouths and the words come out.
Like the original Cyberman.
Yes. Or that scene in Lilo and Stitch where Lilo puts Stitch's finger on the record. And yeah.
Yeah. I love that film.
So good.
Is there a Lilo and Stitch minute? I don't want to get on that.
Yeah. Wow, I wish I was watching that instead of the RoboCop remake.
There's a lot of movies I'd like to watch instead of RoboCop
remake. So, is that about everything?
Yeah, I think I'm done.
Yeah. All right, where can the listeners, lovely or otherwise, find you?
Well, I hope the lovely ones will find me at Helios Photos and Fandom Crossing on the YouTubes and Facebook. I should get around to getting Instagram, but I occasionally do stuff on YouTube, and one day I'll get around to doing Kung Pao Enter the Minute. I got to finish that sucker off. I really, really need to be thinking about it a lot. And where can the lovely viewers find you?
Find me at traviandesigns.com, patreon.com/traviandesigns, TRAVIAN. I realize it's kind of hard to figure out how to spell if you don't see it. And
the links are in the description.
I mean, of course, yeah. And Courtney Colston on YouTube and The Greatest Regeneration on Instagram. And find our podcast on Spotify, iTunes, YouTube, Simplecast, all of that. And until next time.
Take a look at my face, RoboCock.
It becomes so dirty in that context.
Well, you got to replace a dick with a RoboCock, I guess.